But walking away saves you the time, and it saves your customer the time and the frustration. And trying to force something that isn't a fit for them is why a lot of salespeople have a bad name. So I think that, being honest with yourself and being honest with your customers about what you can and can't do also becomes really critical.
That is the voice of Jessica Cornell, Enterprise Account Executive at Databricks, a data and AI company. I had a great conversation with Jess on this episode, and in the process have learned a lot from her experiences and best practices of selling to enterprises. Without further ado, let's get started.
Jess, it's a pleasure to have you on the pod. Thanks for joining today.
I'm thrilled to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you and your audience.
Great. So let's get this thing started. For the benefit of the listeners, Jess, if you can tell us a little bit about your professional journey so far, connect the dots for us, please.
Yeah, for sure. So I've been in software sales for about 10 years. I started in more of a sales development role, selling sales enablement software to other salespeople, which a lot of people tend to think is an easy sale, and it's not, because, much like if you were a waitress and you go into a restaurant, you criticize how everybody does everything. That's what selling to salespeople is like. So I started there, and then I pretty quickly moved into the big data and analytics space, working with data visualization and streaming analytics. I've spent some time selling in the middleware area as well. So think ETL, ESB. I moved from sales development into an inside sales role, moved into a mid-market role where I then led a couple of different teams. And now I'm, for the last 4 or 5 years, I've been in an individual contributor and enterprise sales role. My current role is in a big data and AI company. And prior to that, I sold into manufacturing for industrial IoT.
When you were an inside sales, Jess, anything that from your inside sales time that you feel is really working for you in your current role?
Yeah, and in the current environment for sure too, right? So I think that inside sales, depending upon who you talk to and what their exposure to inside sales is, it can kind of get a bad rap. But I have a tremendous amount of respect for the profession of inside sales. Being an inside sales rep, you're having to cultivate relationships with people in a remote fashion over the phone over a course of time. And so you really learn how to get quickly to the point because you have a very small window of opportunity to engage with people. It certainly helps your prospecting efforts, which is, the most important part of our roles as salespeople is finding new opportunity. So the skill sets that I learned from inside sales, whether it be, outbound prospecting, navigating sales cycles and various stakeholders within a given sales cycle over the phone remotely, certainly is a benefit today. In COVID, we all were inside salespeople. And so we all had to adapt to that. And having those skill sets was certainly a big benefit. And I think it allows you the opportunity to stand out quickly when you're engaging with people over the phone, when you've got those skill sets. Certainly active listening skills, being able to take verbal cues, all those sorts of things that you just you don't really cultivate when you have the opportunity to meet face to face with people.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that, Jez. I too started off in inside sales, and I think the ability to cold call and reach out cold is still working really well for me.
And less people are doing it now. So
I agree. Tell us a little bit about your current company. Who do you sell to? What kind of personas and the types of companies, Jess?
Yeah, for sure. So I think I mentioned before, but my current organization is a big data and AI company. My accounts are primarily in the Fortune 1000, mostly in manufacturing, but I also work with other verticals like healthcare, retail, some high tech. We're targeting organizations who want to get the most value out of their data and do the kind of things like the top 1% of companies that, like, your Amazons, your Facebooks, your Ubers, like do what they're doing with data and AI. And so for me, I'm targeting organizations and individuals that have really sort of lofty goals with data and AI. It's kind of our sweet spot. The personas that I sell to, we are a platform. So our sales motion sort of envelops the likes of data engineers, data scientists, business analysts, And at an executive level, we're aligning with CDOs, CIOs, CTOs. So it's our mission to solve the data team's toughest problems, and so that's who we're primarily targeting.
And data and AI is obviously it's a pretty interesting space to be in, right?
It's certainly a hot space. I think there's a lot of buzzwords around what is data and AI. So I would say that the market is huge. The opportunity is tremendous. But also buyers are really confused about what it means. And so I think that, there's 1,000 different ways to solve some of these challenges that organizations are going after. And so, while it's a great space to be in, it becomes really, really critical that you're articulate about what you do and how you help.
So just I'm assuming that you did allude to that, that you do go after new accounts, new logos, right? And what do you feel are your top challenges there, especially getting in front of new accounts? And what is working for you, or how are you trying to overcome those?
Yeah, so I do. I have a sort of a mix. I have quite a bit of greenfield accounts. I also have some established accounts. And in our business model, we offer a variety of ways to get started on our platform. And we have some pretty decent degree of brand recognition. So getting in front of new customers typically doesn't present an enormous challenge. It's really about adoption that becomes the challenge. So we offer pay-as-you-go models as well as commitments. So for me, the challenges that I'm facing in our sales motion is sort of winning mind share within an organization about how we're going to solve some of their enterprise challenges. As I mentioned, the space I'm in is really hot. It's super competitive. There's lots of different ways to solve problems. So for me, it's about, once I'm in the door and getting in the door from a prospecting effort is, I would say it's easier here than it has been historically for me in organizations, because some companies there's pockets of adoption already that I may not even be aware of. The technology that I sell has its roots in open source. Everybody knows sort of what that does and how it helps. So for us, it's about demonstrating the value that we add and getting people to entertain those conversations with us so that we can get to the heart of the challenges that they're trying to solve. Getting consensus among various stakeholders within some of these enterprise accounts is probably one of the biggest challenges. But it also offers, for me, the biggest promise of heavy adoption and expansion. And so how do you get consensus? You have to prove yourself. You have to lean in with your resources. You have to take the time to understand both the tactical and strategic challenges of an organization. I will talk to anybody in one of my accounts. I know that it's not a popular approach, but I will talk to anybody that is even considering data and AI projects, because it helps me understand what they're dealing with at an organizational level, at a departmental level, and at an individual level. And then when I have the opportunity to talk to anybody within an account, I use what I learn in those conversations with their executives, who sometimes aren't even aware of the challenges that their teams are up against. So that's sort of how I penetrate within accounts. I do a lot of work at the ground level. I try to understand what their employees are faced with. It's good to understand what their strategic initiatives are, but what are the true barriers that are getting in the way of that? And then sort of closing the gap between those two things. Kind of a long-winded answer, but.
Oh, great points. I was actually taking some notes so that I can use them for my approach to new accounts, right? So that's a great point. So there is, there is this thing about, once you get into larger clients, Fortune 500 companies, you obviously, have to make sure that everyone is aligned to what you're trying to position, right? So if you could tell us a little bit about how do you go about that, right? How do you go about winning everyone else? And while you are working in an account, you also, I'm assuming you also need to have a coach. How do you go about developing that, Jess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's twofold. I think in these large accounts, I sort of alluded to some of the barriers or blockers that individuals may face. For me, half of selling is selling internally. within my own organization to advocate for my customers. So in my space, there's a lot of barriers and blockers to be able to get to, you know, meaningful AI projects. There's metrics out there that like 83% of AI projects fail. And so, you know, understanding what those blockers are and who's dealing with them and who influences the decisions that are being made is all really important. But selling internally and advocating for my customers to get them the resources that they need to overcome those barriers or to remove those blockers is critical. So asking and advocating for getting, you know, time with subject matter experts or people that know how to solve these problems early on really establishes credibility within pockets of the organization. And people talk, you know, they spread the word that, you know, so-and-so at this organization stepped in and really leaned in and helped them and they overcame some of these problems. And then they talk to other people who then become interested and want to understand more about what you do. And so it just sort of, it becomes almost viral. You know, help your customers. They need your help. It's not always a popular approach, right? Because there is inherent risk in investing in early stage customers, but it does demonstrate real partnership and commitment to them. And those customers stick with us for the long haul and they grow organically. And then you've got yourself sort of a consistent business. So, you know, you got to put the work in. You've got to demonstrate that you're committed to them. And people throw the word partnership around a lot, but, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, totally agree with that. It's not just about that one-time sale, right? It's just about that long-term partnership. So really well said, Jess. Thanks for sharing that. You know, the way you and I connected were a reference from one of your customers, right? A Fortune 500 customer, a CXO actually spoke really highly about you. So that's great. And that particular customer was also referring to a situation that you handled really tactfully at that organization. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. So, and by the way, thank you to him and to yourself for reaching out to me as a result of that. This particular organization is, when I talk about my sweet spot, they sort of fall right in there. They're highly innovative. They invest in the types of projects that we best support. And I had been working with teams, various teams within this organization, but specifically under this CTO, I had been working with sort of a very lean team that have some really, really lofty goals. They're trying to take, you know, something new to the manufacturing industry. And as part of that, we're evaluating different approaches, different ways to use technology to deliver value back to both their own manufacturing operations, but also to their customers. And so they had been trying and, you know, working through different types of architectural components and things like that. And, you know, we sort of saw where they were struggling and we offered to lean in and prove something out. And that's what we did. We invested the time and the energy and the resources to be able to help them solve some of the challenges that they were solving for from a technology perspective. But it was really important that as we were having those conversations and doing that work side by side with them, that we also were capturing what does this mean to your organization if we're successful here. And we finally got to a place where we had a lot of success in sort of a POC and a pilot. And I asked for this meeting with him because I wanted him to understand how committed we were to making this project successful. This project was something that he brought with him to his new organization that he's been, you know, working on for a really long time and that he's really, really passionate about. And you can see that. You can see it in the way that he talks publicly about it. You can see it when you have a one-on-one conversation with him. And so for me, when we were coming to him, we were essentially coming to him to say, we want to invest more in you and we want you to invest in us and we really want to solidify this partnership. Here's what we've done so far and here's where we can take it. This is where we think your gaps might be. And here's how we can solve for those challenges. But we need your executive sponsorship to be able to push this forward. And I think that we proved ourselves as credible partners because we really did understand what they were trying to do. We demonstrated how we've done it before with other customers, as well as some of the work that we had done with his organization and the way that we invested in them upfront. And we were able to help him anticipate what might come down the road. And at that point, it felt as though we had the right to ask for a more formalized strategic partnership with them. And it sounds like he agreed. And so, you know, I think it's just about, you know, being empathetic to the fact that organizations are working really lean today. But, you know, there is huge market expectations about being able to deliver on some of these things. And you know, helping them deliver on those things upfront, you know, without necessarily, you always have to expect something in return. You know, we are in a business of reciprocity, but being able to prove yourself out upfront, I think, you know, went a long way for making that a much easier conversation with him.
So how did you actually ask for it? Was that was that a formal meeting, an email, or?
So we had a formal meeting. We did a readout of the POC that we had done. We said, here's what we've done. Here are where the gaps are, and this is the investment that we need you guys to make in order to overcome this. And we'd like the opportunity to do that with you. And he said, okay, well, you know, please work with this individual on my team to move this forward. And this particular person is responsible for managing these relationships with partners like myself. And so, you know, it became more of just a logistics conversation than a negotiation, I suppose you would say, in that, you know, we already agreed upon what needed to be done. And it just happened through, you know, through doing the work and organically. So we worked with the individual and his team responsible for that, and we continue to invest in them. It's not, you know, there was no climax per se. It was just another day in the life of us working with them. It didn't feel like a sort of a pinnacle of anything, and we're not going anywhere. So it just it almost sort of subdued the actual transaction itself.
Perfect. If you don't mind, we'll get a little more tactical. There are scenarios, right, where typical sales guys are working on accounts. There are opportunities they are working on. But, you know, while you're working through an opportunity or a sales cycle, you have to follow up on things without looking too pushy or without really coming across as if you're following up. And anything there that you can share from your best practices, just
so the quote unquote checking in, right? So checking in should always have a purpose and offer something of value to your customer, especially executives. So I think it's really important to know what those individuals need to accomplish and share relevant content with them that is actually going to help them do what they need to do. For example, I was talking with a CDO of a very large cosmetics organization, and she shared that there was a sales executive she was working with, and that particular person knew that she was working on a, you know, master data management project or something like that. And he actually sent her a book with a handwritten note in it and said, I thought this might be of interest to you. You don't always have to send somebody a book, but knowing specifically what they're working on and what the challenges that they're facing are, and then sending relevant content. That could be your content. That could be third-party content. It could be your competitor's content. But really understanding what those things are and offering a point of view on it, I think, becomes less of a nuisance and more of a value add. I also like to offer high value activities like executive briefings with my own executives. It's very common for me to offer up, say, strategic alignment with perhaps our vice president of value acceleration or one of our co-founders. We've got 7 co-founders at our organization who sort of created this open source project. You know, these people, you know, their time is limited, but they engage with customers and it allows us to have exploratory conversations at a level that is peer-to-peer. And I think my customers get a ton of value out of that. And also talking about where we're headed as an organization and how our customers have the opportunity to influence that. So when I'm reaching out at an executive level, I'm really trying to offer up things that are meaningful and high value to them. I'm really not necessarily focused on the sale. in a perfect world, and of course, it's never a perfect world, the actual transaction is just another piece of the overall relationship. It's not this massive event. That's what I strive for. Is that always possible? Of course not, right? Some, you know, every organization has procurement and things like that, and you have to deal with it. But, you know, in following up, and because you have to be persistent, the data shows that you've got to, you know, reach out 6 to 8 times. I think it's the number's as high as 13 right now before you can expect a response. But, you know, be persistent, but know the right cadence for that individual too, and be willing to take some of the social cues, whether that's over the phone or via email or in person. You know, are you experiencing a lot of brevity? You know, are they very short with you, but they're not giving you a hard no? Well, they could just be really busy. Have they given you a hard no? You know, maybe take a break for a little while, back off a little bit. You aren't adding value at that point. I mean, if you're getting a maybe, then, you know, you continue to keep it warm, but not be overly persistent. And when the timing is right, they will come back to you as somebody that's, you know, that's reached out, that they remember because you offered value. And it will happen for you. Some people call that luck or bluebirds. I just call it managing the right cadence. And if you're getting a quick yes, move really fast. You know, don't make people wait. Attention spans are short. Capitalize on it. Your competition is there if you're not. So, you know, if you get a yes, don't drag your feet.
These are great points, Jess. You know, thanks for sharing that. Jess, another, you know, challenge, you know, most of enterprise sellers also face is this ability to, you know, meet other folks in an account, right? You know, you have landed in the account. Now you have to mine, you have to meet other folks, but you don't have to do it, you know, just formally, right? You also have to build a rapport with them, both formal, informal. Two questions there. A, your best practices, and B, I'm sure that must have been a little different during this COVID times. Anything that you can share would be great.
Yeah, so sort of that, we talk about going deep and wide in accounts. That's sort of the wide approach. So again, I'll talk to anybody. I do work very closely with my sales development rep, who is outstanding. My current sales development rep is probably the best one that I've ever worked with. And we get strategic about my outreach and his outreach, and we partner on messaging and things like that. So we have sort of a team selling approach to try to get in front of new individuals within an organization. But it also comes down to the credibility that you've built for yourself in the organization, where you can then ask for introductions to other people. So, you know, when you're building coaches and then hopefully building champions, those people are happy to walk you in front of their colleagues because they feel comfortable knowing that you can deliver on your promise and that you're committed to them. So when we go off and, you know, we may have a customer that's on a pay-as-you-go model, or we may have done a POC. You know, sometimes those things work out and sometimes they don't. But if you've done your work and you've put in the effort there and you've, you know, documented and demonstrated, you know, everything that you've done that's of benefit to the customer, those people, you know, they feel comfortable saying, hey, you know, you're a fit for us and you might be a fit for this team too. I want to introduce you to so-and-so. Oftentimes, it's actually a benefit for your coaches or champions to expose you to other people in the organization because it gives them credibility about what they've been able to achieve. And it also becomes an economies of scale situation where the more people they have adopting their platform of choice, you know, the more likely they are to introduce you to other people because it brings their overall cost down when we think about, you know, budgeting and chargeback and those sorts of things. So, you know, I can't stress it enough. It's about building credibility from the ground up with some of these folks where they're comfortable getting you in front of their colleagues. You know, the same CTO that you referenced before, I'm talking with several different areas of their business. And most of those conversations that I'm having have stemmed out of the upfront work that we did within, you know, his particular group that we had POC'd. And so, you know, they're comfortable talking about us to their colleagues. They have confidence in what we're able to do. But, you know, that's not always the case. And sometimes you've just got to grind it out. And in that case, you know, it helps to do the same things that we talk about all the time, you know, doing your research. You know, I think, you know, one of the one of the most important activities you can do is partner with their partners. Who are the other ISVs they're working with? Who are the systems integrators that they're working with? Who are the, you know, cloud infrastructure partners that they're working with? Partner with those people. Understand what they're trying to accomplish in the account and how you can best support them, and vice versa. I find that I probably get just as much valuable information about what's happening in an organization from the partners as I do from people within the organization itself. And then we can team up and work together to solve a problem for our customer. So those are just some of the approaches that I take. Obviously, there's, you know, you have your typical social selling types of activities, sharing relevant content. I'm sure I generate more leads for other people than I do for myself that way. But I connect with people socially. I connect with my customers online. I try to share content that I know is relevant to them. And, you know, and hopefully they learn something from it. And when they need to solve a problem, they come to me.
So just in your opinion, right, you know, coming to probably a very important question is, in your opinion, what are the key attributes of a successful salesperson, especially from an enterprise selling perspective?
Yeah. So I would say first and foremost, it's empathy. I think active listening skills are critically important, and hard work. I have sort of this informal mentor, and I was working with her back in, I think, the February timeframe. And she said, "Do you want to know my secret?" She said, "I outwork everyone." And she does. She invests the time and effort. She documents everything. She heavily prospects. She advocates for her customers, and it shows. You know, her customers, they love her. And I think, you know, hard work beats talent every day of the week. But I think, you know, like being truly empathetic, not just lip service, but, you know, feeling the pain of your customers, and trying to put yourself in their shoes. It's a quick way to dissect, you know, the heart of the problem. And when I say active listening skills, it's like, you know, oftentimes when we do discovery or we're learning or getting acclimated with a new customer, we're listening for cues about things that are going to align best with our sales motion. And we're not actually hearing what the real challenges are. And sometimes those real challenges are not best solved by your solution. Sometimes it's your competitor's solution. Sometimes it's an adjacent solution. So like really listening in for those things, it helps you help your customers solve their problems. It also helps you not waste your time trying to sell your product for, you know, that won't solve their problem, where you end up with very frustrated customers there. You end up with investments being made in the wrong area. It's not a good long-term strategy. So I think active listening and really knowing your space, knowing your customer space, and sort of closing the gap between the two of those is great. I've referred, you know, I've had conversations recently. I was talking to a prospect last week, and they were working towards certain goals with AI. And this individual, you know, sort of shared what he was doing and what some of his challenges were. And it became very clear to me early on that that while our platform could help them at an enterprise level solve for their challenges, what he specifically was trying to do was not a good fit for us. And I let him know as such, and he agreed, and we were able to, you know, cordially part ways, and I offered to send along information should I arrive upon it that might be a better fit for what he's looking for. And I did. That afternoon I came upon something and I sent it over to him and said, "Hey, you should probably look at this." So, you know, those types of activities, you know, I hate to use the word qualifying out because it seems so impersonal, but walking away saves you the time, and it saves your customer the time and the frustration. And trying to force something that isn't a fit for them is why a lot of salespeople have a bad name. So I think that, you know, being honest with yourself and being honest with your customers about what you can and can't do also becomes really critical.
Great. So just, we all had our tough deal losses, right? And I ask this question to every sales leader who's on my podcast. And what I've learned in this conversation, I have actually learned a lot from their experiences of, you know, what they have learned from their deal losses. So if you could share your learnings from any deal losses that you can share without naming names, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. When you had sent me the questions ahead of time, I sort of looked at this and said, yep, I can think of a few. So one of the more recent ones, I was working with a customer, and they are, I guess, what you would describe as digital native. Their business was started in the age of the internet. They depend on the internet for their business. That's how people engage with them. Think about them in terms of marketing and advertising. They rely on their partners and content to run their business model. So this particular organization had a certain degree of sophistication in the work that we do, which is typically a very good fit for us. And so given the nature of the skill sets of the people in their organization and the volumes of data that they were dealing with and some of the challenges that they described to us, it seems like a perfect fit for our platform. And I had known that other people in my organization had worked with this organization before, unsuccessfully, but not, they never got a no per se. They just said a maybe later type of thing. Typically, well-known enterprise for sort of building versus buying. And so they knew our open source technology stack and they knew sort of the value that we added. But there were some really specific challenges that they were trying to solve for. And, we spent a lot of time doing discovery and understanding what those challenges were technologically, what the business impact was for them, that if they continued to do things in this way, what did that mean to their business? Versus what would a change in a solution mean to them? And for them, it was a lot about productivity of their people. It was a lot about infrastructure and elasticity and scalability. This particular company was heavily impacted by COVID, And so they were really thinking about how do we get leaner and how do we, make the people that we do have more productive while still being ready to go once we come out of this pandemic. So we had gone in and really thoroughly scoped a proof of concept with them and, said, hey, we're here to help you, support you, lean in. And we did. But one of the contingencies of us coming in there to do that work was we want the opportunity to align with these two executives in your organization so that they know, sort of where we stand and the value that we're going to add. And we had agreement up front to do that. We were at the director level for this particular proof of concept. There was a VP and a C-level executive that, we had asked to speak to. And they were ultimately the decision makers. And we had agreement that that would be the case. Well, we conducted the POC. We thought it was very successful. And then things kind of fell off. And it became clear to us that they were evaluating another solution, of a partner of ours who we had already spoken to. And then we were kind of cut off from what was happening. And we never got the opportunity to have that executive meeting until they had selected our, our competition in that case. And it was really frustrating. And I think, one of the lessons I learned was, as much as I advocate for doing the work up front, right, investing and showing that commitment, I think it's absolutely fair to make sure that who you're being told makes the decisions is in your line of sight and that you have the opportunity to connect with those people and that you're aligned with what they're trying to do. So it was a tough loss, but it was definitely a learning experience. And we didn't, the other takeaway there is that those people that we worked with during the POC liked our technology. They may go to another organization and take it with them. For what they were trying to do at the time, they found something that better suited their needs. And it wasn't apparent to us up front that they were actually going to evaluate that technology. In fact, it was our understanding they already had. Just really getting clarity and making sure that, there's transparency there and validating what you're being told, is an important part of the process. So that's probably one of the more recent losses that we took that was kind of a tough pill to swallow.
That's a good one. So what do you think you could have done different there, right? Just because in that scenario, everyone would have done the same thing that you have done, right? What could you have done differently there?
Yeah, I think, asking for that executive meeting to happen earlier would have been the right approach. And normally I wouldn't say that. Normally I would say, we did what we should have done, and we lost to because the other solution was a better fit. But it became apparent that, those executives that we were aligned to had sort of an affinity for our competitor's solution. And if we had known that upfront, we may have not have made the decision to invest the time and energy and resources into a pretty exhaustive POC. I've certainly had situations where they said, yes, you will have this meeting, and you have that meeting and things go well. In this particular case, given the history that we had with this customer and, the way they had kind of kicked tires in the past and what we knew about them, I think I should have given that some more consideration before maybe agreeing to invest the time and energy and resources there. So sort of knowing how a company operates and how they typically invest, I could have spent more time understanding that before we put the resources on it.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that, Jess. Is there any other example that you would like to share?
It's funny. In my current role, it's not so much losses, it's the no decisions. So we talk about losses a lot, but I think the most painful in enterprise sales is the no decision. And that sometimes means there is a decision that they stay with their incumbent, right? Sometimes a no decision is a decision to stick with their current technology stack. And that also happens. I had an opportunity with a retailer last year, and they had sort of a legacy data environment that was on premises, and we run in the cloud. And we knew this organization had some challenges in terms of their own resources internally, how many people they had with varying degrees of skill sets. We knew that their legacy environment was coming end of life. That it was very costly for them to maintain, and that they were considering modernizing their data architecture. And so we work with this customer regularly anyway, and we saw this opportunity where we could help support them in a migration effort, and went in and did an assessment of what this would look like. We assessed their current environment, what it would take to migrate it over to our environment, what the benefits would be from an infrastructure perspective, infrastructure savings, from a gain in productivity perspective, and what were the business implications of that? So they're a retailer. They're dealing with, the fallout of COVID. Their business has had challenges, over the last 4 or 5 years anyway, and they're kind of working with very little. Their environment was just, the lights were just being kept on. And we basically found a way for them to use existing investments they had already made to make this happen and to move it all over, and put a lot of work and effort into justifying this migration for them and what the benefits would be. And at the end of the day, they decided to stay with their current solution and just upgrade it, which was the same level of effort to migrate to our solution. But they weren't ready to make a change yet. And knowing what I know about this organization, having worked with them for quite some time, it didn't come as a surprise to me, because they don't have the opportunity to think as strategically. They're in survival mode. That type of risk for them, that sort of migration is it's too much. It's too much for them to be able to handle right now. And I think that I lacked the empathy that I talked about earlier in understanding their situation there, and pushed for this assessment and pushed to try to get them to do something that they frankly just weren't comfortable with at this time. So it was disappointing. I think that, the decision that they made felt right for them at the time. Only time will tell. And I think that we have an opportunity to continue partnering with them in other areas. And then when the time is right, they know the value that we can demonstrate by having that migration happen. So In my case, that was kind of a no decision loss. But you know, we did things the right way. We did them the way that we could. And sometimes in certain economic environments or, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, displacing an incumbent is really difficult to do. And, you know, acknowledging that and asking yourself if it's worth it, worth the time and resources to try to do that. So
that's a great point. There's, you know, we all have, you know, our down days or days when we really hit a slump, right? So how do you handle that? What are your best practices there, Jess?
Prospect. Nothing invigorates a salesperson like a new opportunity because you haven't felt the frustration of it yet. So, you know, on days that I have a slump, you know, typically my days are pretty jam-packed. So I don't really have the opportunity to have a pity party for myself. But it happens to, if I happen to hit a slump, I get bad news. I don't get what I want. I think, you know, the only remedy for overcoming that is we all do it. We beat ourselves up. We look at ourselves and, you know, sometimes our confidence wanes a little bit, or, you know, we say, what could we have done differently? Nobody's perfect. What we do is a grind. It's really, really hard. Enterprise sales, any sales, inside sales, enterprise sales is really hard. And if it wasn't hard, everybody would do it. And this is, you know, this is why we have the opportunity to make really, really good livings in what we do. But it's not perfect and everybody loses deals and we get no's. And, you know, those days are when we need to refocus and say, where else can I go look? Where else is the new opportunity? For me, like it's almost as exciting to cold outbound prospect somebody and get a yes to an initial upfront meeting as it is to close a deal. Cause it's so hard. It's so hard to get people to respond to you in today's environments. And so, you know, the prospect of engaging with somebody new and learning something new and helping them solve those challenges and potentially getting a new customer or a new logo, like that's the most exciting stuff in sales for me, you know, other than really, really big deals. So I would say, you know, on days when you hit a slump, you know, get at it, hit the phones, get on email, you know, get on LinkedIn, start reaching out to people. Because all it takes is one yes to get your mindset back on track.
I love the points. You know, thanks for sharing, Jess. You know, finally, do you have any, you know, before we close the pod today, do you have any advice for the enterprise seller, anything that we have not covered today?
I mean, I don't think there's anything we haven't covered. I don't want to be redundant. So, but yeah, I mean, keep grinding.
Very nice. I love that. Are you guys hiring any sales roles? If you are, what roles are you hiring for, and what is the best way to reach out if anyone is interested?
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, we are hiring. We're hiring both in my region in New England, and we are hiring all over the place because we're growing like crazy. So you can go to our website at databricks.com/careers. You know, certainly feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to point you in the right direction. Jess.cornell@databricks.com. And would love to have you join one of the greatest companies in the world. So
I love it, Jess. I love that. So just greatly appreciate you coming on the pod today. Some really great points shared. Thanks for taking the time today. Appreciate that.
I appreciate the opportunity. And if anybody has any questions, they know where to find me.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do subscribe to the podcast, and I will greatly appreciate if you can leave a review. If you have any suggestions for future guests or any feedback, please write to me at zia@sellingtoenterprises.com. See you on the next episode. Thank you.